You're listening to the More Time, More Profit podcast, the best place for entrepreneurs who are looking to grow past the startup phase of their business, but still need to learn how to free up more time to drive more profit. Now, present these real strategies, your successful business coaches and hosts, Adam John and Grant Muriel.
Welcome to More Time, More Profit, episode number 24. Today's show is titled Five Pillars to Asset and Business Protection. My name is Adam John, and as always, I'm joined by Mr. Grant Muriel. What's going on, Grant?
Not much, buddy. Just finishing up my latest stint in Australia, and actually looking forward to going back to the Philippines for Christmas and New Year's. But I'm also pretty pumped up as well. I've got all of the webcams, cameras, microphones, everything all ready for us to jump straight into video as we move into the new year. What about you, buddy? What's up?
Woohoo! Yeah, I've just been planning my travels for the next 6 months, so I'm heading back to Asia, so I guess we'll get a chance to catch up again, which will be pretty cool. And I'll be back in the Big Smoke. I think we'll be hitting Singapore, Philippines, maybe Bali, and I'll probably do 3 months, bit of a kiteboard season in Boracay there, which should be nice.
Bam, feels like it was history.
Love it. So today we're talking about asset and business protection. Asset protection is the process of using multiple layers of protection to guard your business's assets in the event legal action is forced upon you. It also protects you personally, so that if your company runs into trouble, you are not personally responsible for its liabilities and vice versa. As business owners, it's our job to not only turn a profit, but it's equally important to ensure that we protect our business's best interests and assets from competitors, unhappy clients, staff, creditors, and the government. You can protect your business's assets through correct structures and entities, protective documents such as contracts, NDAs, patents, and trademarks, and different types of insurance, including professional indemnity insurance, workplace cover, foreign theft, etc. It also covers internal protection from your staff, ensuring they don't take your IP and jump ship. In business, just like in our personal lives, we need to make sure that our biggest assets are protection. You wouldn't buy a $1 million house and not insure it. If it burnt down or it crumbled in an earthquake, you'd be financially ruined. And the same goes for our business. Over the course of years, we build up lots of valuable assets, so we need to protect them. And if we get it wrong, we can go out of business instantly. Providing the right asset protection will ensure you're not personally liable for business debts. You don't lose everything if you get sued. Allows you to operate freely and not out of fear. Protects your IP if a competitor decides to rip off your product. And ensures yourself against mistakes and neglect. Failure to protect your assets could see you asked to pay back business debts from your personal bank accounts. So you might have to sell your house to cover your company debt, which is not good. Good luck explaining that one to your partner. You can get sued and lose your business pretty much overnight. And people can steal your idea and profit from them. So here's an example. A young electrician finishes his apprenticeship of trade school. He opens up his own business, not paying any attention to asset protection. He does a job one day in someone's home, and afterwards the client goes to turn on the light switch and gets electrocuted. Based on his negligent work, the client sues the electrician. The electrician doesn't have the right structure in place or insurance, and as a result, he loses his house, business, and he has to file bankruptcy. Now, this is a bit of an extreme version, but it can easily happen. And in today's episode, we'll take you through the five keys to asset and business protection so you can confidently run your business and navigate any potential liabilities.
Now, you say that's a bit of an extreme example. However, one of my childhood friends actually went through that exact scenario that you just shared. We didn't actually talk about this before. And it was as simple as one of his apprentices was just neglectful and forgot to do a particular thing within the roof. And it turned out that there was a fuse shortage or something like that throughout the entire house. And it basically shorted everything that was connected to the power. Now, this was on the business owner to go and fix, and he didn't have insurance. So I can relate to that exact scenario. Although it sounds like it's really rare, these are the situations that we really need to protect our businesses of, because our apprentices, our staff, our team members, anyone who's affiliated with us, we don't have real control over what they do. So even if they've just had a lazy day or they're quite tired and they've done something not maliciously that has caused some kind of impact to somebody, we have to wear that as a business owner, not them. So you always need to make sure that you're covered. So if you have any questions or feedback during the show or even after it, jump onto the Facebook group or go to the website www.moretimemoreprofit.com and ask any questions that you have, because this episode is going to breeze across the top, but you might have some very specific questions.
Absolutely. Grant, can you take us through the five pillars to asset and business protection?
Look, I'd absolutely love to. But before we jump into the meat of this episode, I will just say that you and I aren't lawyers, and this episode doesn't count as legal or accounting advice, and is only here to represent based on our experiences and to give you kind of like that stepping stone of where your business will get to. As you've shared, Adam, this episode is all about protecting your business and your assets, also your team, and most importantly, yourself. So the business world can be the wild, wild west. And I've seen them and individuals be sued over just business relationships. Heck, I've even seen it so bad that it occurs when competitors sue businesses and even some personal vendettas. So we really need to ensure that when, not if, but when this happens, your business is really protected, especially as this is usually your sole source of income. So at More Time, More Profit, we always remind listeners that they need to seek professional advice when it comes to this level of information. However, Adam and I have spent over six figures collectively across our businesses just to set everything we have correctly. And so what we're going to do is present to you exactly what we've learned through our experience. So here are the MTMP, five pillars to asset and business protection. First up, you've got advisors. Following that, you need to set up your structure of your business. Thirdly, you have the protection of your business. Fourth is the insurance covering your business. And the fifth is the security around the IP of your business. So what are they in a little bit more detail? So the advisors are people such as your attorneys, your accountants, etc. They must have a clear understanding of the context of your business. So if I'm talking about project management, they would just assume that we're a service business, but I need to get down into a little bit more granular detail of exactly what we do. We also need to ensure that they can deliver to our business where we want to be in 5 to 10 years. It's no use going and replacing them every 2 to 3 years and moving up the spectrum. As the entrepreneur, you also can't be ignorant and you always have to learn everything that an advisor is sharing to you. And depending on the type and size of your business, this will depend on the size of the advisor and the detail of the advisor that you need. What we suggest at More Time, More Profit is always having a base requirement of advisors as an attorney that you can go on reference or a financial or accounting professional. The second part is the structure. So this includes things like your sole traders, partnerships, trusts, ownerships, share breakdowns, etc. This is where you can set the degree of separation from yourself and your business. And you've probably had some kind of structure before, but you need to always ensure that you are protected and your assets are protected. As an example, having assets in different entities ensures that there is enough shares to sell off equity for investments or also to try and get a better outcome for when you sell your business in the future. And this really is dependent on the location in the world that your business is set up in. I know Australia is very different to the Philippines, which is very different to the United States. This can also be used to minimize your tax obligations for the company towards the government, as well as support your investments from a company perspective. So having it all set up correctly from the beginning is going to support where you want your business to be in 5 to 10 years. And it's extremely difficult to go and change that structure midway. And the required base structure that we always suggest is anything that removes you personally from being liable. That's all we always say to everybody. The third part is the protection. So this is anything from non-disclosure agreements, service contracts, trademarks, patents, copyrights. And this is what covers your business or your business's ideas from other entities stealing them. So NDAs are always applicable for business meetings. Trademarks are things to protect words, names, symbols from being reused and people stealing your brand identity. Patents protect the rights around inventions. Copyrights where you can protect any literacy, dramatic representations or works. And really, depending on your business, will depend on what you need to cover. So going and talking to a professional is what you really need to do on this. For every business that More Time, More Profit gets involved in, we always set NDAs for all clients as a base requirement, as well as our contracts for the service or the products that we're offering. The fourth part is insurance. This kind of includes things like indemnity insurance, anything that can cover neglect, etc. And it really ensures that the business does not close or is not significantly impacted. It also creates that extra layer of protection just in case that worst case scenario happens. So things like liability insurance can protect us from any services or products that cause harm or loss to a client, where asset insurance can cover things like our computers, our vehicles, etc. Look, in all honesty, it sounds like it's just a cost that we have to put on top of the business, but it is fairly cheap when you factor in the cost and the potential outcome that a business could have if they're not covered. And look, there are other types of insurance such as OH&S, etc., which will be applicable to your specific business. But the base requirement that More Time, More Profit suggests to everybody is getting an insurance broker to look at everything that you need to have covered. And the fifth and final part is security. So protecting your files, your processes, your intellectual property, your systems, etc. This is all about protecting your business from any malicious behavior from staff members or anyone else internal to the company. It can be used to help protect from theft primarily, or even your intellectual property being moved onto a key competitor. It's more about protecting internal requirements and making sure they're not stolen, used, or being attacked instead of trying to protect us from the external, such as clients. This might seem as quite basic with things like Dropbox and Google Drive. However, we're consistently seeing people have their businesses taken away from them or even the key intellectual property and applied to different competitors from assistants or key staff members who finally leave, as which every employee does, is where they pack up. So our required base security is either to go with Google Drive or Dropbox in order to go and segment departments based on what access they have. Although it seems like it's quite a large list and everything might be a foreign language to you at the moment, you cannot ignore this. As a business owner, you can't walk into a courtroom whilst being sued and plead ignorance. The government does not care. It's your job to know this information and set your business up appropriately and be covered for every potential situation that your business could go through.
Hear, hear, well said. And if you want the show notes from today's podcast, go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/024 for episode 24.
We'll be right back after a message from our sponsors on the More Time, More Profit podcast.
Hey, Adam, buddy boy. Look, I've heard you guys consistently mention leveraging outsourced staff, and I'm definitely keen to try it out. And I know More Time, More Profit has over 20 years experience in outsourcing and 8 years experience living in the Philippines. And so you are the guys to ask. So, can you point me in the right direction with regards to filling some full-time positions in my company?
Yeah, you are correct, and I do get this a lot. What real problems are you trying to solve?
Let me tell you. Well, I need to grow my team to cater to the ever-growing client base that we have. I also want cheap staff to drive better profit. And most importantly, I need people who already have a great skill set so that I can get some of my most important time back.
Okay, so outsourcing is cheaper and it allows you to scale very quickly. It covers jobs like web design, administration, development, writing, finance and bookkeeping, marketing, social media and SEO, just to name a few. But have you thought about the potential problems with your staff?
Mate, sounds like everything I need. But you mentioned other potential problems? Like what?
Let's consider your IP walking out the door. What about data security? And what about the reliability of your staff?
Hells no, man. But now that you mention it, what about fast internet, payroll, benefits, employment contracts, etc.?
Don't worry about it, buddy. Have I got a solution for you?
All right, let me have it.
Look, as you're a trusted listener to the show, I'm happy to introduce you into our network. We partner with the fastest growing outsource agency in the Philippines, and their security is better than Fort Knox. They're the only company I trust to look after my network, and they'll give you the same red carpet VIP treatment that they give to us.
Nice. But honestly, I'm a bit worried about signing up and just getting dumped with some individual or even someone else's rubbish.
Once again, don't worry about it. There's no problems. You get as many interviews as you want to find the right person to fit the right role for you. You can hire someone from as little as 20 hours a week. And if you inquire today, More Time, More Profit will cover the first week for free. Just go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/VA to find out more.
No way, the first week free. But honestly, I'm a bit of a nervous Nelly and I'm still concerned is there going to be across the other side of the world.
Look, don't worry about it. For yourself and anyone else in our network, the More Time, More Profit office is located in the same city as our partner. If there are any issues that need escalation, we're more than happy to go in and represent you.
Wowza, you'd actually use your team to help me out if I really need it? You do have faith in their ability. Look, what is that website address again?
Just go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/VA and get started today.
Thanks, man. I'm going to jump onto it now.
Back to the show, the More Time, More Profit podcast.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Look, let's jump into an example, Adam, of where you've implemented asset of business protection.
Easily done. So first I'll say that this is a super important topic, but it can also be super expensive. I don't want people out there to feel like they have to do all of these things, but as your business grows, you have a lot more to lose, so therefore you should be putting some thought into it. In some of my earlier business, I didn't have any money for client contracts and NDA, so I just wrote my own, but I knew that if something went wrong, I would have had to simply close the business and open a new one. So what I'll do is I'll take you through what goes through my head whenever I start a company or when dealing with one of my companies. Point number one is advisors. So the first step is to get some good advisors. These can be expensive, but they're worth their weight in gold, and it's impossible to build a big business without them. If you don't have trusted advisors, I suggest you set about finding them and get someone that's willing to go the journey with you. I'm not just talking about someone you send a contract to every now and then, someone who shares your vision for the future and someone who wants to take that journey with you. So when I sold my companies, I had exactly the same accountant and strategic planner from day one. We took the whole journey through together. He knew the ins and outs of my business. He'd set it up. He knew how to sell it. I didn't have to worry about it too much. Any problems I had, I just send straight through to him, which is exactly what you want in an advisor. I was referred to this guy by a colleague. The first day of the business, I marched him and told him my business plan. We wrote everything up on the whiteboard. He took me through all the ins and outs of the legalities and advised me the best way to set things up. Now, if you do get advice from your advisors, I suggest you take it. It's not one of these things where you say, what do you think I should do? And then you come up with your own solution. You're paying these guys lots of money, so you might as well listen to them. From there, my financial advisor introduced me to a lawyer that he works with, and we formed a great team. There's nothing worse than having a team that's not on the same page, so your lawyer doesn't want to talk to your financial advisor or your accountant, and vice versa. If any issues come up in my businesses, they can be handled by one or the other, or both of them working together, which leads us into point number two.
Just on that, so I love this concept of how everybody works together and you whiteboard the ideas, right? I don't know. It's a strong opinion that I have, but I think that if you go and seek any advisor and they don't care about the context or even the future position of your business, I'll turn around and walk the other way because they're looking at you as a transaction. So every single month, they're just going to do the bare minimum and they're going to wait for you to come to them with questions about where you're trying to get and how they can implement. Where if they're coming to you, that's what you need. You need someone thinking forwards for your business, not you trying to be the one forcing it.
Exactly. It's just not an out-of-the-box solution. We're not selling a Happy Meal here, right? We're not a Happy Meal. We're an a la carte menu. So our business and our menu is completely different to everyone else, and we want a specific chef to sit down with us and come up with the perfect ingredients to make sure that we succeed.
That's it. It's not a process document.
Absolutely. So point number two is the structure. And for me, this is the most important on any of the lists as it adds the best layer of protection. Setting up a company properly will ensure your limited liability, better tax protection, and it makes it easier to sell. There are many different options from sole traders in Australia through to sole proprietorships in the US through to corporations, partners, trusts. I won't get into them all here. We have people listening in about 50 different countries. For me, when I do it, I set up a company in Australia. I'll have two companies. So one will be the trading company. The second company owns the shares in the company and the dividends are paid into a trust. This is simply done to protect me personally. Having two companies gives me two layers of protection from the get-go. So if my company gets sued, they don't have access to my personal money or my properties. So we talked about the electrician in the first step. You might have to mortgage your house or something along those lines in order to pay your company debts. Having these different layers of protection ensures that you're protected, you and your family and your loved ones, which is really important. If I bought an office or a warehouse, I'd have it in its own entity and lease it back to the company. Once again, if the company gets sued, the office or the warehouse is safe from prying hands.
And this is applicable in real life as well. I know people who own properties in their own trusts and companies rather than putting it under their name.
Absolutely. Point number three, we're looking at protection, so NDAs, trademarks, patents, and copyrights. There are lots of different types of these, but I'll just touch on a few. I always have an NDA on standby. Anytime I deal with a third party, I always ask them to just sign a non-disclosure agreement. This just protects the inner workings of the company. And if someone isn't willing to sign one, I won't do business with them. The first thing that goes through my head if someone comes to my office and won't sign an NDA is, okay, what are you looking to steal from me? If you're not willing to protect yourself legally and our ideas, are you going to do something malicious with them? And I'll march them out the door and I won't have anything to do with them.
And we actually had that situation, 6 months ago where we had a 2 or 3 hour meeting booked. Someone wouldn't sign the NDA and the meeting was cancelled. So it's very important.
Absolutely. I also ensure that I have a shareholder agreement. This protects me with dealings with my partners. It just outlines what we're allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do. For example, you might have a partner and you don't have your shareholder agreement in place and he could go get a loan for $1 million without your knowledge. So you need to protect your business internally as well as externally. If I had any products or inventions, I would look into patents as well, but this isn't something in my line of business. Point number four, we're going to jump into insurance. And I'll tell you a little story here. Many years ago, we were doing some marketing for one of our clients' websites and we were giving specific access to sensitive information. We were actually using a third party at the time to do our development, and they had their computer hacked, giving out the passwords of our client's site. To cut a long story short, the client's site was hacked, causing a loss of business and also a pretty hefty fee to rebuild it. We were semi-covered at the time, meaning we couldn't get sued personally because we had the right structure in place. We were lucky enough to negotiate a fee to pay for the rebuild, which was quite substantial. But if they wanted to, they could have pushed and they could have taken us to court, and we didn't have insurance at the time. This is a very stressful and traumatic experience for us. So we went straight out and got some professional indemnity insurance just in case these little things happen along the way. We talked about the light switch for the electrician. We talk about one line of code you could get wrong and it could bring the whole business down and you're personally responsible or negligent. So it's really important. And it's also worth considering if you have warehouses, office and plant equipment, etc., to make sure that they're all covered, much the same as your house insurance. Point number five, we're going to look at security. So this is for internal security, just adds another layer of protection. We outline what's expected in our employment agreements for our staff, and we also protect our data on a need-to-know basis. We don't give everyone access to all the company information. We only give it relative to the job that they're doing. This way, if they get any ideas and they want to go start their own company, they don't have the entire piece of the pie, and it's very hard to replicate our business. We do our permissions through our Dropbox system, and pretty much that's about it. As a bare minimum for this entire process, I would have the structure set up correctly, as well as insurance. I like to think it's asset protection as four shields for my spaceship. If I'm flying through space and I have a very, very expensive spaceship that I've built, the more four shields you have up, the safer your ship's going to be from asteroids, enemy ships, environmental conditions, crash landings, etc.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. I would probably also protect it from my team on my spaceship as well. There's so many people out there that probably aren't trying to be malicious, but they always have their intentions at heart, right? So they're always looking out on ways that they can improve and step up above others. We just need to really protect ourselves from situations like that.
Grant, can you jump in and show us an example of how you've used asset or business protection?
Love to. So look, in my history of business, I've set up about six complete business entities. The first ones were all set up with knowledge I actually got from university, which is funnily enough, and they were all sole traders, which basically put me completely at risk.
Wrong.
Yeah, basically. Then after that, so that was about two of them were sitting around there. I think third and four were all set up as company, which was all well and good until I had leveled up my accountant and had found out that as a director of a company, I'm still legally liable and I can still be chased depending on how serious someone wants to take it. So that was wrong. And now all of them are all set up in a structure that really protects me first, then the finances of the company second, and then the team, etc. after that. This is all primarily because my finances grew and I could start getting a level of insight and advice that I could actually then apply to the business that was people who knew what they were talking about as opposed to people who had just read bare minimums. That's kind of my journey of how I've come through it. But in saying this, if I had the ability to do it all again, I just would have made a higher priority to invest in the proper advice, structure, and protection from the outset. I kind of wish that someone had a podcast like this that I could have listened to and just had a checklist of saying, these are the base levels that I need to have in my business. The example that I think is going to be quite applicable to people is an Australian example of how I've set up probably the most recent company that I've been involved with. And to that, the most important thing for everybody is to understand the different business structures that are applicable in your location. Australia, United States, UK, all are very similar, but very different as well. They seem similar on the outset, but when you get into the granular levels of them, there are quite a few differences between them all. So what I'll be doing is I'll be covering off a company that I've invested in, but I'll be looking at it from a perspective of having multiple owners, right? So we'll look a little bit deeper into how the greater team set up their shares. We'll look at exactly how a group of smart and successful individuals go for setting up the business. So business has got approximately sort of four or five people at this stage I'm going to be referring to, and I'm going to be walking through exactly what they've done and the conversations that we had around how we can set it up, including the personal structures that people put in place to protect themselves. So let's jump into it. Part one is advisors. When we say you need advisors, these are not mentors. These are people who earn a living from the information that you provide to them. At the start of a business, I used to use mentors, advisors, so I'd get them to ask questions on my behalf, but then it became secondhand information and a lot of things were lost in translation. It was good for bootstrapping, but probably wasn't the best for my business. So the advisors that everyone needs in their business is people like the accountants, who is a must-have, and you need a one-on-one relationship with them. And legal advice. You might not put them on a retainer, but just as a point of reference. Now, in this business, we didn't look for any of them cold. So we didn't just go and do a Google search and type in accountant or lawyer. We basically looked in our network and found anyone who would refer us across to people. We tried to set up a couple of them because we could sort of bounce off our personalities and find the best one suited for us. We looked actually for people who were in our network to go and refer, but people who were successful and had businesses set up in a structure that we were looking to try and replicate. From this, we ended up hiring a highly accredited accountant who was a reference of one of the other business owners, who has now become our CFO of our company. And we also ended up using an IP lawyer that I've used in the past, as well as a commercial lawyer who one of the other business owners has used from their network. Once we found these individuals, we started to really educate them on us and our business, right? We wanted them to be able to say our own business's vision and mission. We also gave them context to the business that we had so their advice could be applicable to that, but also shared to them on where we're looking to become in the future so that they could call out anything between now and 5 and now and 10 years that's going to be a gap or a hindrance to us getting to that level. And now just a small piece of frustration that's going to be a lesson learned for everybody. And what annoys me the most is that even with advisors, as long as they can prove that they were not deliberately negligent, it is your fault if what they've done is incorrect, right? So if a lawyer writes a conflicting argument and not appropriately explains a clause in a contract, it's your fault and the contract becomes null and void, right? It's not on them. Or if a bookkeeper reconciles some expenses incorrectly and the tax office finds out, it's your fault and you have to cover all the fines. Advisors are not at fault when you're ignorant to what they're providing advice on. You always have to make sure and second question everything that they do to ensure your business is always covered.
Yeah, I think that's super important. The emphasis is back on you to know a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah, I've seen too many people caught up on this. So the second part is the structure. So before we went out looking for the best structure for this company, we looked at where all of the key business owners wanted to be. So were we looking for potential investors, the amount of shares we needed available for that, looking at other people's personal structures and whether or not that could tie into the company. What about our applicability for loans, insurance, etc., and trying to find our list of requirements. Once we created that list, we began discussions with our accountant. What we found was a list of requirements that we had. There was a business structure that was going to be able to support the individuals and the business separately within the same structure. Our accountant also found out the best structure that was going to be applicable to future employees, which we didn't have because all employees at that time were business owners. And we also looked at different countries to go and set up. So even though we're located in Australia, was that going to be the best for us from a government grants perspective? Was that going to be the best for us from a tax perspective, etc.? And so that's exactly what our accountant went out and sought advice on. From here, the structure that we actually went with is as follows, and I'm more than happy to share this. The overall business is managed by a proprietary limited company, and then every single owner of the business has their own equity owned by a separate company. So it's the main company is in the middle, and then every owner has another company representing that part of the business that's owned, and then they're owned as a trustee. So it goes, so if we looked at my structure, I have a trust, which a company is operating on behalf of, and then that company owns the equity in the other business. So this is the key way that we've all found ourselves removing liability from ourselves from the business structure. And it's quite common, especially within Australia. The structure also allows us to distribute dividends from the main company and also create more shares if we get other investors on. With the 5 to 10 year vision being at either selling the business, getting more investors or going IPO, the structure supports that as well. And just as a note, the structure was found to be the best one for us and is used by many other companies, but won't actually get in the way for anything that we're looking to do in the future.
Yeah, I think that's great. I've actually had colleagues who have set up companies and they've issued 10 shares. Well, what if you have a huge super company and you want to have 20 investors? You can't break a share down into 50% or 0.5 of a share. So not only are we talking about protecting your assets, we're making sure that the company is set up from the get-go for the tax liabilities, but also so you can sell it properly down the track or get the investors on board.
Yeah, and as a point of that, I usually suggest to people to have at least 100,000 to a million shares. Sounds a lot, but it's really critical for when you're starting to break it up in the future. Point three is our protection. So similar to the structure, we sat down and looked at all of the negative situations that could occur to the business, and this basically formed the protection requirements that we needed. So we looked at things like clients not delivering their side of the agreement, clients claiming we did not deliver our side of the agreement, entities we interact with, taking our methods, our processes that we've shared with them, any potential algorithms or IP that we create and people interact with, protecting our brand from anyone stealing it, clients not paying their invoices within the 30 to 60 day terms, etc. So we just created this really big list. From here, we then broke each one down to where they could be covered up in a greater requirement. So for example, with clients not paying and not delivering to their agreements, we wrap that up into a contract. For people sharing our methodology, our USP, etc., we wrap that up into an NDA. And we looked at trying to get advice on how we could wrap everything up to ensure that one thing covered a lot. As we were a startup phase, we had a lot of things that we had to write ourselves, similar to yourself, Adam.
So we super dodgy.
So we collated a lot of our agreements from things that we'd all signed in the past, right? So we basically merged a whole heap of documents together to form the documents that we had. But then what we did was we went and got it reviewed by our lawyers to ensure there wasn't anything missing. So this actually saved us quite a lot of money because all they were doing was making sure the wording was correct and seeing any gaps. Everything that we had merged together was already written by official lawyers and everything like that. So we knew that most of our bases were going to be covered and the wording was going to be quite appropriate.
Yeah, I think that's super cool. If you go get a contract, it might take, you know, $1,000, $2,000 to get, but just downloading one on the internet and applying local law to it or getting one off a competitor and just ring them up and say, yes, I want your products and service, send me the contract, and then you can send that to your lawyer. All they have to do is add the local government requirements on there and you can save yourself $1,500 off that $2,000 bill. So that's one way to do it when you're actually bootstrapping from the get-go.
As sneaky as it may sound.
Well, they probably did it from their competitors as well, so you're just passing it on and paying it forward.
Someone's probably already done it to us as well.
Exactly.
So step four is the insurance. So the approach that we had for covering the business was not setting our requirements because we don't know what we're unaware of, right? So we actually did this a little bit of a sneaky way by going out and talking to quite a few insurance brokers. Insurance brokers you don't pay, right? So we got free advice from their experience. We get to discuss with them as many scenarios without paying for it. We got an overview of the costs for each type of protection across a couple of different companies. And we also got to create a list of things that we should consider and manage the risks that we're willing to take on. After all this, we created a list, we created our providers, and we looked to review what we could. We found that most businesses we work with require at least a level of professional indemnity insurance, which encompasses a lot of scenarios like neglect, etc. And basically, we found that a lot of the other things that were presented to us, we could manage those risks. So we probably didn't need to pay those overheads at the moment because the probability of that happening is 0.00001%. Where something like being neglectful is something that's real and it's a real risk that we probably couldn't mitigate as much as we wished. We basically crowdsourced all of the information, we evaluated the risk that we were willing to take on, and we paid for insurance in areas that we weren't willing to take that risk on ourselves. And that's exactly how we went and found the insurance that we went with.
Could you imagine the all these Samsung phones that are blowing up, what level of insurance they would be paying and paying out to people's homes that are burning down based on these phones exploding?
Yeah, and then they had the washing machines that had the malfunctions as well, so they had to go and return, which is like $1 million or so washing machines.
Yeah, once you do product recalls, I think they're up to like $18 billion in product recalls and things like that. So you can bet your bottom dollar they've got some serious asset protection in their big companies.
Yeah, although the one big kicker for them is the revenue that they've actually lost, as well as the share price they've actually lost. I know looking at Samsung, they're looking at actually splitting off the entities to try and get a real value of what the company is worth. So part five is security. Now, Adam, you cover this almost perfectly, especially one of those extremely close to you situations where it's all about your internal team stealing your IP. So I took ownership of this for the business because I've done it a million times before. I've told people how to set it up. And we basically broke the company down into different departments such as product, operations, finance, services, customer support, etc. From here, we then signed up to Google Drive and Office 365 for our emails. And we created a folder for each of the different departments and gave access to the employees that only required that level of information. Even equity owners that don't require access to different parts, we've pulled them out completely. So we thought about where we'd be in 5 years and made sure that this structure could go and support it. If we were to grow to a 50 and 100 and 200 person team, we could go and then create subfolders and split out service levels. And we're also able to remove someone who gets terminated from our business from accessing everything within about 5 minutes. So as you can see, all of these five pillars are critical to ensuring that the business is protected from the outset.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely awesome. And as we said, as your business grows, so will your assets and so will your liabilities. So look, you can, you know, we don't necessarily recommend writing your own contracts and things like that. But, you know, if you're in a new startup business, you don't want 50% of your costs going into all the legals. I would suggest you get your structure sorted. And as you make a little bit more money, invest back into the legalities of all of that. You know, we talked about four shields. It's best to have, you know, three or four shields up than no four shields at all. So make sure that you are protecting your business. They say that a dollar saved is a dollar earned, and it's specifically important with this, especially with a lot of people out there looking to sue you, looking to get your money in one way or another. It could be staff members, it could be business partners, it could be clients that are unhappy. So make sure you're protected and make sure you actually save that money and your assets from within your company.
Couldn't agree more.
Grant, can you quickly walk us through the summary points to the five pillars of asset and business protection, and we can wrap this puppy up?
It would be my pleasure, buddy. First up, we've got advisors such as attorneys, accountants, etc. And these people are tasked with delivering, setting up, and advising the business on their profession based on where the business will be in 5 to 10 years. Second one is the structure, such as trusts, sole proprietorships, ownership, share sales, etc. And it really ensures that the business will minimize costs in the future, creating limited liability whilst also supporting where the business will be in 5 to 10 years. Third part is protection, such as NDAs, contracts, trademarks, etc., where we can secure every part of intellectual property that your business has, including what it provides to the customers. Fourth step is the insurance, such as indemnity insurance, preventing from neglect, etc., which will financially cover us for any horrific scenarios that we can't prevent ourselves, where employees are being neglectful, tarnishing your business, etc. And the fifth part is the security, such as files, processes, intellectual properties, systems, etc., where we can further protect our company's intellectual property from our internal attacks whilst also being extremely affordable.
I love that. So important, that list. Make sure you get in and have a look at that one. And to download all the amazing examples, brilliant frameworks and wrap-up points from the show, go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/024 for episode 24.
That's right. I'd nearly say just download the checklist, and when you're setting up your business, just walk through the examples that we've shared and make sure you've got it all applied. So don't forget to download all of the points so you can work off that sheet and run through them yourselves.
We'll be continuing this conversation over on Facebook. You can go to Facebook and search for More Time, More Profit group and join in the conversation with us there.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Don't forget to jump onto iTunes, click subscribe, listen to our podcast, and even leave us a review of exactly what you've thought of and taken away from our show.
That's it from us. We'll catch you the same bat time, same bat channel next week. It's bye for now.
Catch you later, guys.
You've just been listening to More Time, More Profit podcast. For more info, check out moretimemoreprofit.com. Make sure to tune in at the same time next week for another dose of real-life business strategies.